receive the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. That means God is the greatest. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Our beloved minister.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, we give him praise and thanks for his mercy, his goodness to the members of the human family. Whenever any member of this family strays from his straight path and earns his displeasure, before he punishes, he always raises from among the people a prophet or a messenger of God to whom he gives what is called divine revelation by means of a scripture. This scripture is used by his prophet or messenger to guide those who will back to his straight path, once again earning his divine favor. We thank Allah for Moses and the Israelite prophets that gave us what is called the Old Testament. We thank Allah for Jesus and the apostles that gave to us the Injil and the New Testament. And we thank Allah for Prophet Muhammad ibn Abdullah, through whom Allah gave to the world his final revelation that leads us up to and through the judgment of this present world. I am a student of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and I could never thank Allah enough for his merciful intervention in our affairs in the person of Master W. Farad Muhammad, the long sought after Mahdi of the Muslims and Messiah of the Christians. We thank him for his coming, and we thank him for raising up among us one to lead, teach, and guide us, one to guide America, one to warn America and the world, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. In their names, I greet all of you, my dear and wonderful brothers and sisters, with the greeting words of peace. We say it in the Arabic language, Assalamu alaikum. I want to thank first Minister Ismail Muhammad for his warm introduction, and for all of you. For all of you who bought a ticket, and even after buying a ticket, were kind enough to give something to help us in this noble cause. Thank you, thank you, thank you. To the laborers of Mosque number 36, I believe. Thank you for the wonderful work that you have done and are doing to make this day in this city of Charlotte possible. The laborers that Brother Ishmael introduced, you gave them a hearty round of applause. I want you to do it one more time. Thank you. To Dr. Ron Carter of Johnson C. Smith University, who received me at that wonderful Institute of Learning, and to the young students that I had the privilege of talking to, and to the students who are gathered here today from various institutions of learning in this wonderful state and from other states, we are honored beyond words by your presence. We were met from the time the plane landed by the authorities of the airport and the police personnel that surrounded our presence and guided us safely from the airport to the Hilton Hotel where we were staying. And the kindness, the graciousness of the police, the kindness and the graciousness of the mayor, who this could not have happened unless the mayor gave his approval. We are grateful, and we don't take this for granted. We are honored by the wonderful service and treatment that we have received since we have been in Charlotte. The city has been so warm and kind and gracious to us. It makes us feel that Charlotte should be our second home or something. I have not felt so excited to be in the state of North Carolina and in the city of Charlotte. I want you to know that it is in this state, North Carolina, that I found purpose for my life in my coming from Boston, Massachusetts, to study at Winston-Salem Teachers College, which is now Winston-Salem State University. I am grateful again to all of the members of the FOI and the MGT who always, wherever I go, they find a way to come and aid whatever is required of them. Man, if I had a hat on, I would tip it to the MGT and to the FOI. Thank you. Thank you. To Reverend Dr. Walker, what a great man. What a great pastor. What a great friend. Because we see in him a true disciple of Jesus the Christ. And we are honored to be in this city with this brother, to have had the honor of speaking at his church to the leadership of Charlotte. Another round of applause.
for Reverend Dr. Walker.
To my wife and family, to all of the ministers, reverend clergy that are present, to all of the political leaders that are present, to all of the professors and teachers that are present, I can't tell you how honored I am by your presence. But most of all, I'm honored by the presence of the common people of Charlotte, North Carolina. Yesterday, while I was at the park for an outing that was so beautiful, sponsored by Mosque Number 36 in conjunction with our staff in Chicago and others. I also want to thank Brother Yusuf. Stand up, Brother Yusuf, who arranged for me to come to Johnson C. Smith University. Thank you, Brother Yusuf. We're standing on his shoulders, and we're standing on the shoulders of Brother Student Minister Lee and all of those who came before to lay the base. Brother Ali Shah. Oh, what a great imam he is and was, because we don't speak of those who die in the way of God as dead. They are alive, but we understand not. And before I go any further, I'd like the first imam of the Nation of Islam to stand, Imam Sultan Rahman Muhammad. I hope I haven't missed anyone, but if I have, charge it to my head and not to my heart, as Reverend Jackson said years ago. Now, you know, today I was to talk on the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's economic blueprint to fight against poverty and want. And 2 weeks ago, while I was sitting in the barber chair, a thought came to me. When we chose Charlotte to be the host of the 17th anniversary of the Million Man March, we didn't know that President Obama and the Democratic Party would have their convention here just a few weeks ahead of our arrival. And the thought came to me that maybe I should postpone that very important subject and speak on that which is more relevant. Because today we face the American electorate and those who would be subjected to the results of the election just 3 weeks from now, both here and throughout the world. This election is so very, very important to so many. It's important to the extreme right that President Obama is not reelected for 4 more years. They may say that it's economics, it's It's about jobs. But we sense that there's a deep racial undercurrent that is found in the Republican Party respecting Brother Obama and this election. Ever since he has been elected, the Republican right, with Rush Limbaugh, Breitbart, Fox News, members of the Senate and the Congress, many in state legislatures, their whole idea has been to get this man out of the White House and nullify any policy or position that he might come up with that might bring success to his presidency and that might possibly give him a second term. It started like an undercurrent, but now it is so overtly hateful and racist in nature that it is polarizing America on the basis of race. So when we look at Mitt Romney, you see the super PACs and the intensity and commitment of those who are backing him. No matter how many blunders he may have made, nothing has stopped this march towards defeating President Obama for a second term. And on the left, you see a coalition of black and brown and Native American, Asians, Jews, Gentiles, Christians, Buddhists, Hindus, white and black, who seem to feel that a second term for Barack Obama, since he cannot come back for another term, would give him more leverage to enact policies that would be for the long term good for the American people. But there's a problem with both views. The racist view doesn't care what Obama says or does for the benefit of America. It will always be played down. But on the other side, the vast majority of the electorate, the Democratic side, the poor, the underserved, the underclass, there is nothing that we see, even if there is a second term, that will radically alter the condition of the masses of blacks and the masses of the poor. All of the focus has been mainly on the middle class, from both sides. What happened to the poor of this nation? Who will speak for the poor? Don't the poor deserve to be recognized and represented and thought about? The scripture says that the poor heard the message of Jesus gladly. And is that the reason why the scribes, the Pharisees, and some of the Jews of that day hated him? Could it be that when you speak for the poor, the rich feel left out? The rich feel that you're troubling with that from which they get their riches. The rich people get their riches from sucking the lifeblood of the poor. So in this election, it really doesn't matter who wins. The problem that that person and those around that person have to solve is so great that if radical thought is not put before the American electorate, this nation will fail. America is at a point where radical solutions must be applied. And a key word that has been missing from the standard bearers of both parties is a word called sacrifice. Now, sacrifice means the surrender or destruction of something prized or desirable for the sake of something considered as having a higher or more pressing claim. If the problems in America are to be solved, sacrifices are going to have to be made all the way from the rich down to the poorest of the poor. The question is, what is America willing to sacrifice? Not who. We already know that the poor are already sacrificed. But what is America willing to sacrifice? What is government willing to sacrifice to bring about fiscal responsibility that in this generation would begin to solve the problem so that the future of America might be safeguarded? What must government do? What must corporate America do in terms of sacrifice? What must labor unions do in terms of sacrifice? What must bankers do in terms of sacrifice? What must the American people do in terms of sacrifice to address the enormous debt that has now enslaved the American people and will continue to enslave future generations if this debt is not brought under control? What are you, Black America, willing to sacrifice? Because we have to make some sacrifices too. Now, you might say, I already don't have nothing. Wrong. So wrong. Last year, according to economists, they say that $1.1 trillion came through the hands of Black America. But what did we spend our money on? Where did our money go? How foolishly did we use our resources? So yes, if we're going to come up out of poverty and want, we have to join the party and make a sacrifice of the party. Will the impatience of Americans and the unforeseen challenges of the future cause there to have to be a new government rising out of the ashes of this one? For this nation is now being sent to the depths of hell by the inordinate greed and lust for power and the wealth and resources of the peoples of the world in the hands of a few to the detriment of the many. Who do you think you are, Farrakhan, to offer guidance to America, to the world, to the president? By what right, by what authority do you attempt such? I want to make this very clear. This is our country. The possessive pronoun our. This is our country. In fact, because of the contributions that we have made to America, We have more right to say so about the future of this country, since it is we who built America. Even though we were slaves at that time, what we have given to America in terms of wealth and service gives us the right to offer guidance to our nation. Now listen. Even though we've given to America a trusted relationship, that no matter how ill-treated we have been up to this moment, we have never been an enemy to this country. Never. Black people are not involved in terrorist activity to our former slave masters and their children. Black people are not plotting evil against this nation. Even though our thoughts may be different from others, it is yet not from the position of an enemy. It is rather from the position of a true friend. We claim the unfettered right to give guidance. We claim the authority of God to give guidance. We have no other country to go to. We live here. We've suffered here. We've died here and on every foreign battlefield to preserve America for you and not necessarily for ourselves. But now we are maturing. We're rising up by God's permission from the shackles of slavery to offer guidance to the only country we have known from the best of motivations. Allah God has visited America to raise us up. Not to be your worst enemy, but in spite of how badly we have been treated in the time of your greatest trouble, in the time of your greatest suffering, in the time of your greatest dilemma, we are here to offer you divine solutions to your plethora of problems. You sing it in your song. This land is your land. This land is my land. I want to say it again. This land may be your land, but this land is definitely our land. And we have every right to guide this president and anybody else who wants to lead America. Deserve the right to vote. We deserve to fight against any abridgment of that right by any scheme or machination of our former slave masters and their children. We deserve the right to elect people of our race to help lead. We deserve that our elected officials should be respected and not plotted against by a racist system that wants to keep America white. But look, America, you're dying in your whiteness. me, if you want to stay white, it's okay. But you'll just die white. Because the future of America is that we are here now. It's not a place of just white people. The whole human family lives in the borders of America. So if America really cannot open the heart and the mind and get a new attitude to receive what God has sent into these shores, then you will die, but you won't take us down with you. You will die alone. Did you not read in the scriptures that God would choose the despised and the rejected to be his people and he would be their God? Did you not read that the stone that the builders rejected would eventually become the headstone of the corner? Did not you read that God would vex you with a foolish people and that he would search the earth for his lost sheep that would be found enslaved and robbed, blind, deaf, and dumb, yet he would raise one to open the eyes of the blind, make the deaf hear, make the dumb speak, raise the dead to life. And this act, listen good, of opening eyes of the blind, making the deaf hear, the dumb speak, raising the dead to life, this would prove the powerful wisdom and the guidance of the God who found us and the God who now has chosen us to be a guide for you. Wait a minute, Farrakhan. Or Farrakhan, however you want to call me. God has never selected his guides from among those whom the society had educated. He selects his guides from the meanest of the people, not mean-spirited, but meanest. And so that definition, meanest means those having little or no money, goods, or other means of support, dependent upon charity or public support, the needy, the indigent, the destitute, the penniless, the poverty-stricken, the meager, the miserable, the unhappy, and the pitiable. It is among those kind of people that God has always chosen his messengers and his prophets. Well, his pattern has not changed. The God that is prophesied to come in the last days, that has found us, has declared that the wisdom of this world is considered to be foolishness in the sight of the guidance and the wisdom that he would bring. And as we watch the debates, which I'll get into in a few minutes, we are witnessing foolishness. Absolute foolishness. But I'll talk more about that in a few minutes. So, the God said he would place that wisdom in the head and in the heart of a man who would say, quote, I thank thee, Father in heaven, for keeping these things from the wise and the prudent man and revealing them unto babes. Well, we are those babes. And I hope that you will pay good attention to what you are about to hear from the head, from the heart, and from the mouth of your former slaves. So let us begin. The Nation of Islam has been in America for 82 years. And during that time, the originator of the nation, Master Farad Muhammad, guided and warned. For 40 years, independent of his teacher, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad guided and warned. And oh, it's right there in the Holy Quran. If you would look, Moses was given 30 days, and then 10 more were added. And after 40 nights, Moses said to Aaron, take my place among the people and act well, and follow not the way of the mischief makers. After 40 years, Elijah Muhammad made me his Khalifa to sit in his seat, a nation and a world and a sleeping people. All the way back to the beginning of my effort, with the help of many of these beautiful brothers and sisters here, to rebuild the work of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we were giving warnings to America that the problem of justice for the black man and woman is going to loom greater and greater. But the clearest warnings that were set down were given to me by God to give to George Herbert Walker Bush, as well as his son, George W. I warned them of what God had shown me, of what was in their minds. Now, stop right there. I know you are wise people, but I don't think God showed you what was in the mind of Reagan. But he showed it to me. And I didn't hold it to myself. He showed me what was in the mind of Bush. He showed me what is in the mind of Barack. You can take it or let it alone. I'm opening up everybody's mind today. Let's talk about some of the things that we have been guided to say over the years that have proved true. When Reverend Jackson ran to be the nominee of the Democratic Party for the presidency of the United States, he asked me and us to come by his side, which we did. At that time, I was then standing up for him against many in the Jewish community who were trying to sidetrack and destroy his bid for the presidency of the United States. And at the height of that in 84, I was invited to the National Press Club by the president of the press club. And it said here, July 30th, 1984. Listen to how they addressed it. Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan, accompanied by bodyguards, addresses a sold-out, boisterous club luncheon maintaining his racist and anti-Semitic views. Club president John Fogerty says, quote, "I am proud to be president of an organization whose members and officers have the courage not to turn away from controversy." Now, at that time, they wanted to weigh Farrakhan, because this is the first time that a black man in modern history has stood up to an attack by members of the Jewish community and fought back. And the more I fought, the more you rose. See, a punctified leader cannot raise up a scared to death people. I am born from a fearless leader, Elijah Muhammad. No black man, none, has ever said what Elijah said and did among us what Elijah did and never backed down. How could I say I am from that man and then not represent the fearless, courageous man and leader that he is? In 1984, we pointed out in that speech at the press club, which I hope that the final call will put up on the web site, that you may read what we said before many of you were born or were conscious, so that you will know that your brother has been consistent all the way through. I have never backed down by the grace of God. Listen. I pointed out then, before the world press, that the people that we have elected to public office are no longer our representatives, but they are representatives of a corporatocracy, the oligarchy, the rich and the powerful. And because they can be bought by the lobbyists that are exercising sway in Washington, D.C., they are gradually eroding democracy for the American people. Now, I said this in 84, at the height of their calling me an anti-Semite. I have never been an anti-Semite. I just am against lying, deceiving, robbing, and raping the American people and the people of the world. In 2010, the Supreme Court, in a landmark case, sanctioned the emergence of super PACs by which corporations can spend unlimited amounts of money to buy elections. It is just unthinkable that a man would have to raise $1 billion to buy an American election. It's not substance. It's not intellect. It's not the ability to really solve the problems of America. It is who got the slickest media campaign. Because right now, you are the dumbed down American people. The wicked manipulate your ignorance. So a man like Farrakhan and my teacher, Elijah Muhammad, are hated. What have we done? I soon will be 80 years old. I never have been arrested. Not for chewing gum or spitting on the sidewalk. Best they got on Farrakhan is a heavy ankle and a speeding ticket. But what have I done that you hate me so? I rape nobody. I rob nobody. I don't have sex with little boys. I don't smoke reefer. I used to. I don't smoke crack. I don't drink liquor. I don't eat hog. What have I done? Did you hate me so? See, it's because you can't bend me. And you can't buy me, and you can't make me into your nigga. Financiers like the oil tycoon Koch brothers, casino owner Sheldon Adelson, who have invested tens or hundreds of millions of dollars to buy elections and buy the person that gets elected. I was interviewed by CNN in 1997 after I was blessed by God to survive a 14-hour operation where the cancer that I had and the radiation that they gave me was designed to kill me. So they took out half of my insides. Yes, yes, a complete pelvic exoneration. But while I was under the knife, or just before, I sent for, what's brother's name?
Steve Harvey.
Steve Harvey. 2007. He flew in and looked at me on a gurney, tears in his eyes. I said, look, brother, I need you to just tell the people to come to Detroit for Savior's Day. He said, what? Now, I'm about to go under the knife. People thought I was not going to make it. And I'm telling him, tell the people that I'll be there. The doctor who was operating on me, I said, can you get me ready for Savior's Day? He said, look, Farrakhan, don't sweat us. We're just trying to get through this operation. The operation ended, I think, on the night of the 4th of January, 2007. And by February 26th, I was in Detroit speaking for 2 hours to those who came very much alive. When Allah got something for you to do, death has to go on back and wait till God gets ready to call me in. And he's not ready yet. So they asked me on CNN, what do you think about this young man, Barack Obama, who was running then for the office? I said, quote, he's a young man with fresh ideas that could be good for the country. And then I said, but I am under no illusion that he's going to be able to accomplish what he has in his heart to do. And after he got elected, I gave a lecture in Chicago at our headquarters, where I warned America that he reminded me of the she camel in the story of the history of Sally and the people of Hud in Arabia. This she camel, camels are unique creatures. They can get you across the desert without taking a drink. Their lashes on their eyes, well, some of you get these little eyelash things, you know. And you do resemble a camel. Oh, no, no, no. No, I didn't mean it in a pejorative sense. I meant that the eyelashes of the camel come out and turn up, and it allows the camel to go through the dust storms that are in the desert to get their rider from point A to point B. And I said to the American electorate that Barack Obama reminds me of that camel. Yeah. That God told the wicked in that day, do not harm or hamstring this camel. And I said to the American electorate, leave Obama alone. Because if you leave him alone and help him, he can get you across the desert. Now listen to this. But the wicked in the time of the prophet Sally and the people of Hud hamstrung the she camel. Now let's see what America did to Obama. Y'all all right? Just hang with me. I ain't got nothing but time. I know them seats may be a little hard, but you know, we in the nation, we always hug each other and give each other cheek to cheek. Just cheek to cheek, you make it. Well, you know, it's always good for a little levity when the subject matter is so tough, because it's going to get more rough as we go down the road. Listen, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who said, listen to his words, the single most important thing we want to achieve is for President Obama to be a one-term president. Listen, what kind of self-interest is this? If the majority of the American people voted for this man, the Electoral College agreed with the popular vote, why would you want to go against the popular vote, the Electoral College, and against a man who is trying to fight for the good, not of some, but of the whole? Why would you say you want him to fail? And if he fails, what is the result for you? What is it that has blinded you, Republicans? It is race. And your hatred of a black man rising after you thought you had destroyed us totally. Now we are rising. And no power in the heavens above or in the earth beneath can stop the rise of the black man and woman of America, the Caribbean, Central South America, Africa, and the Isles of the Pacific. We are on the rise and there is no turning back. Rising, and it is blinding you, your hatred, the good that we could do for the country. So you purposely hamstrung that man. And your aim was not only that he would be unsuccessful, but if he had any success, you would do all in your power to limit its effect. Now let's listen to this. According to the New York Times writer Robert Draper, in a book titled Do Not Ask What Good We Do by Robert Draper, on the night of Obama's inauguration, the Republicans met and plotted ways to win back political power. I want you to listen. All that I'm saying to you is fact. And they met to put the brakes on Obama's legislative platform. The meeting lasted for 4 hours. And about 15 ruffians, the Masons and Shriners that are here, they know what I'm talking about. Fifteen members of the House of Representatives met. And three of them, isn't that interesting? Eric Cantor from Virginia, Paul Ryan from Wisconsin, and Newt Gingrich. They agreed to go after Timothy Geithner and to show united and unyielding opposition to the president's economic policies. Their job was to jab Obama relentlessly in 2011, so that they would win the White House and the Senate in 2012. This is a quote. You will remember this day, reports Draper Newt Gingrich as saying on the way out of the meeting, "You'll remember this day as the day the seeds of 2012 were sown. You'll remember this day because their intention was to destroy his presidency." Well, I do want you, Mr. Gingrich, Mr. Ryan, Mr. Cantor, and the other ruffians that were with you. I want you to remember that day, because on that day, you sowed the seeds of the destruction of the United States of America. Take it or let it alone. I'm just saying, I'm going to prove it. I got some lawyers in the house. They're watching to see how we present the case. You don't know how happy I am to be in Charlotte. Now, you may not have known this, those of you who are 17 years or rather 10 years old or even 20 years old. When 9/11 happened, which was September the 11th, 2001, we held a press conference at Mosque Mariam 5 days later, where I was guided to say that this so-called war on terror is really a war against Islam. I want you to put my press conference up so that the world can see what I said 5 days after, and it made more sense than what any American leader or religious leader said. Go read it for yourself. God has raised a guide for you. These wars of aggression have now enveloped nearly all of the Muslim countries. I wrote a letter to George W. Bush right after 9/11, the 1st of December 2001, and I warned him about his response to what happened. I wrote that his anger would blind him if he allowed it to dictate his response. Listen to what I was guided to write. "Afghanistan is only a preliminary to a much wider war, which is already planned." Now, you didn't hear me. This is proved today, too, to be true. This war also has a home front aspect to it as well. But should you persist in this, you will do what no Islamic leader is able to do. No leader of any Muslim nation can call for jihad or holy war and cause the Muslim world to obey that call. However, Mr. President, if you follow what you have in your mind, which many of those around you are encouraging you to do, then you will do what Osama bin Laden and no Muslim extremist could ever do. You will unite the Muslim world in hostility against America and Great Britain. And you will use your great position of power inadvertently to call for a holy war against the West. you will force the more moderate Islamic regimes either not to side with you or to side with you at the risk of being overthrown by growing Islamist forces within their countries. Listen. The coalition that you are gathering will fall away from you, and you will have to pursue this war alone. That letter is a beautiful letter, full of prophecies that have now been fulfilled. Go read it for yourself. This year, France announced it will pull out of Afghanistan ahead of the U.S. and NATO, and at the start of the invasion of Iraq, 38 nations provided troops. By 2009, 14 nations had withdrawn ahead of America, and the Muslim world now perceives America as using the war on terror as an excuse to attack Islam. According to the Pew Research Global Attitude Project, the favorability rating of the United States, while once high, has now plummeted. I also wrote, I'm afraid that this extended war may take a turn that you and your advisors least expect and involve America in the greatest of all wars, the war of Armageddon, in which no nation will be left out, including Russia and China. What is the result of his heedlessness to good counsel? Tensions with Iran and the conflict in Syria have united China and Russia against America. Both countries vetoed U.S.-backed U.N. Security Council resolutions threatening the Syrian government with sanctions three times, and China and Russia have both said they oppose any military intervention against Iran. China is importing oil from Iran against U.S. interests, while Russia is building a nuclear power plant in Iran. A former top Russian general said this year that an attack on Iran by America or Israel would be an attack on Russian interests. Now, President Bush did not heed that advice. Now, I don't know whether President Obama read that letter, but he sure started his presidency in the spirit of that letter. He wanted to bring so-called rogue nations around, offering them not a clenched fist, but an open hand. Everything that he did to try and implement the good of that letter and the good that was in his heart, the arrogant, racist, greedy element in America set out to destroy it, and in so doing, they have really destroyed themselves. And unfortunately, they have also destroyed Obama and made him now an agent of their wicked policies against the Muslim world. Did not you hear me say a few years ago to watch the weather? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Come on now. Yes, we're going to talk. Yes, you don't have nobody else to compare me with. Yes, but my father. Yes, sir. Listen. I told you, watch the weather. The distress would come, the fall of your dollar, the weakness of your economy. This is what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad has said, and this is what his faithful minister has said. In 2011, President Obama shattered the single-year record for disaster declarations with 242 disasters in total. Before him, only President George W. Bush declared more, having signed an average of 129 disaster declarations a year while in office. He was in office 8 years. And every year of his eight, over 129 disasters a year. Now watch this. After 2011, which has the record of disasters, I said again, watch the weather. Because God don't fight with your cheap weapons. God fights with the forces of nature. Rain, hail, snow, wind, drought. He uses the insects and the animals and turns nature against you. You can't win in a war against God. But keep on going. You'll understand it better. Not by and by, but very soon. So, after repeated warnings that go unheeded, the problem is getting worse. So the Quran says, whenever Allah sends you a messenger, then he seizes the people with distress and affliction, not to destroy them, but that they might humble themselves to a messenger that comes to them from among the meanest of the people. See, an arrogant leader want to know, what credentials do you have? What college did you matriculate from? Your colleges don't prepare messengers.
That's right.
Your colleges prepare those who bow down and serve you. Well, now if we just look at the distress and affliction that America is under as we speak, and the result of that distress is how you've handled the warning from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his faithful minister to you. You've done everything you could, and you are still planning to destroy me and the Nation of Islam. Yes. But all that I have said you would do, you have done. You've killed Gaddafi. He's no more. You've killed Saddam Hussein. He's no more. You've killed Osama bin Laden. He's no more. But your problems are greater now than they were then. My brother Gaddafi opened the door to you. He wanted to come in out of the cold, and you sent Stevenson. And he found himself in Benghazi among the enemies of Gaddafi, working while Gaddafi had opened the door for him. He was working to destroy the revolution of Gaddafi and to destroy Gaddafi. And so you sent weapons. You sent your planes and your bombs. And you killed my brother. But you were so anxious to destroy him. You were feeding Al-Qaeda.
Go ahead.
You were feeding religious extremists.
Go ahead.
So it's only natural that he should go to Benghazi and meet his fate from those whom he was educating to destroy a man and a revolution. And some of you are now saying that if Gaddafi were alive, Stevenson would still be alive because that country would still be under control. Now, don't come here expecting me to be no Watertown Farrakhan. Don't come here for that. Come here because you are interested in hearing truth from a man who's not afraid to tell the truth, even at the cost of my own life. We told the leadership conference yesterday I know they plan to kill me, but it won't happen. You plan against my family, but you can't come to me and tell me you're going to kill my dear wife of 59 years and tell me if I don't stop talking, you're going to kill my wife. Or you gonna kill my children? I said, kill them all. We were born to die.
Yes, sir.
We were born to die. But I know damn well you'll never kill my family unless it pleases Allah. So, you're about to come out of Iraq, but what have you left behind? You're talking about coming out of Afghanistan, but the bleeding and the dying is still going on. What you have left behind is worse than what you found. And your condition is worse now than it was in the 80s and the 90s. So after the warning that Allah gave me to give to Bush, he left office in disgrace. He was so disgraced that you wouldn't even invite him to your Republican convention because you did not want his presence to cast a dark shadow over the man that you had elected to be your standard bearer. So you have hamstrung a she-camel. But I am the she-camel. Yeah, I'm going to make it very plain. If you got time to hang with me. Look here. Look at this. I'm saying this to Muslims now, because you all going to have to study. All of the punishments that are written in the Quran never came to pass in the time of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. Never. But every plague that is written in the Quran is going to come to pass in America under the modern Pharaoh, in the modern Rome, in the modern Babylon, in the modern Sodom and Gomorrah. Take it or let it alone. So it looked like President Obama understood our attempt to guide President Bush, because you campaigned on a platform of change which resonated with the American people and with the people of the world. They had hope that maybe you would change the direction of the nation from where Bush had taken it. And in the beginning, it seemed as though you did want to do that. But unfortunately, you fell in with the neoconservatives. And you started fulfilling the agenda of all the former presidents against Iraq, against Libya, against Cuba, against Iran, against Korea, Somalia. And everywhere you see Islam rising, America did not want an Islamist state to follow. And you say you want a moderate Muslim. You got the right question. What is that? Here's the Quran. I'd like to ask the Quran, is there such a thing as a moderate Muslim? Either you are or you are not. Here's a book that represents moderation. Oh yeah. This book tells us avoid extremes, for most extreme is sin. Huh? Well, you say, Farrakhan, it seems extreme for you to take an adulteress and give her 80 stripes or behead somebody that's a Jew according to Jewish law for adultery and fornication and for killing homosexuals and all of that. That seems very extreme. It is. I want you to follow this. See, Master Farad came. And he taught us Sharia. Listen. Just give me a little time, man. Healing good. He taught us, and his servant Elijah Muhammad taught us, that I'm teaching you how to respect the law so that you can go anywhere in the dominant Muslim world and be at ease in a society that imposes Sharia. That's right. We didn't smoke. They do. We didn't drink. Some of them do. But the good ones, they won't. We didn't use drugs. We didn't fornicate, commit adultery, kill our babies through abortion. We followed the law. The law of God. We know, listen to me good, that imposing the strictness of Sharia after coming out of a loose, corrupt government is wrong. When a people have been under those who are the enemies of Allah and have lived loosely, you have to gradually bring them back to the strictness of God's law. But if you just put it on them, which one of you are holy enough to kill people who offend God's law when you, the leaders, are the biggest offenders of the laws of God? We have a modern meaning given by Master Farad Muhammad to Sharia. Those of you who think Sharia is a curse, we have written a book called The Restrictive Law of Islam is Our Success. Go take it and read it and call me back and tell me that this is not a law that if we lived in America and the American people would be safe. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I have a few words for the Muslim world. We have a thing in Islam called honor killings. Some have come to America and their daughters have fallen in love, and they have offended the honor of their families and the law, and the mother and the father have killed them. They call it honor killing. I'm saying to you, go back to your country. You're in America now. You're in a place that don't have no respect for righteous law. What the hell did you bring your daughter here for? And put her in an environment where sex and fornication and freakishness is the order of the day. And if she falls victim to that, you have the nerve to kill her? What did you come here for? A little girl in Pakistan was shot in her head and in her neck by someone who claimed to be a Muslim, denying her the right to be educated. Our world of Islam needs to be reformed. And that reform will not be guided by those in the East. That guidance for reform of the Islamic world is coming out of the West, and we are that light. Muslims. There are 99 attributes of God. These are his names. But there's a feminine part to practically all of the attributes. How could I be Hakim and my wife Hakima? Hakim means one possessed of wisdom. Then if my wife is Hakima, how would you deny her knowledge, which would raise her level of civilization among the beasts of the field? How could you deny knowledge to a female? What kind of Muslim are you? Now we challenge Muslims in America. Rise up and educate your people. Know that you're in an environment that is lawless. And if your daughter slips, be merciful. Bring her home. The dishonor is you killing her. Jesus had a woman brought to him who was found in adultery. And the lawful Jews of that time found her in adultery. But it was only she that came before Jesus. I don't quite understand that. Somebody commits adultery by themselves. This is going on in the Muslim world right as we speak. A man can do it and get away with it, but the woman is charged. See, you're sexist. There's no justice in your works. You will be uprooted. It won't be long now. Allah is not pleased with you. Know this. Your days are short. We have to clean up the house of Islam. Yes, sir. Well, you Christians, is your house clean? Come on! Then if we're going to clean up the house of Islam, you clean up the house of Christianity. It is full of hypocrisy. Clean up the house of Judaism. It is full of hypocrisy. Clean up the house of religion. Well, I guess, America, you'll have to search now for a moderate Muslim. And by moderate Muslim, you mean a moderate Muslim to America is a Muslim that will countenance America's foreign policy and directives. And if that foreign policy counters justice and truth of this book, then all of us have to stand with the truth of this book. And that will mean we'll have to stand against your policies if your policies go counter to what is right, what is true, what is fair, what is just. There's no such thing as a moderate Muslim. All Muslims live their lives according to the will and law of God. Even in the time of Paul, when the authorities in Rome wanted him not to preach in Jesus' name, say, you can preach whatever you preach, just don't preach in his name. Paul answered, shall I obey man? Or shall I obey God? See, and if you are true to your faith, Christian and Muslim, you will love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. See? And if you're a true Muslim, your oath is, my prayer, my sacrifice, my life, and my death is all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. There is no compromise with unrighteousness. Minister, are you homophobic? No, I don't fear homosexuals or lesbians or transgender people. I fear for them. Wait a minute. You have become so deviant from the word of God found in Torah, in Gospel, and Quran. Now you want to change God's way as though God don't know what he's doing. And you judges, you pastors, you bishops, you imams, even, that call yourself an imam and have a homosexual mosque. I say, well, Farrakhan, you sound hateful. No, no, no. Any homosexual that is in this audience, your brother loves you. Wait a minute. Because ain't none of us free from sin. None of us can throw down on somebody else and their faults when nobody is perfect. Nobody. I love my homosexual sister and brother. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told me not to worry about you, because Allah has something for you. And you can interpret that any way you want. But what Allah has for you is good for you. He didn't come to destroy us. He came to retrieve us. He came to transform our lives. I know the press is going to have a field day on this. But I have to say what I have to say. Now, look here. It's something that America is spreading democracy abroad by the use of the sword. The same thing you accuse Prophet Muhammad of doing. Spreading Islam by the sword. Now you have your bases everywhere. You're trying to spread your brand of radical democracy at the threat of the sword, or at the threat of holding back from other nations' aid to them. You have 1,077 U.S. military bases dotting the globe, but what they call black budgets or covert secret principles in these budgets, nobody actually knows for sure. America, you don't have much more time. In the early 70s, Tony Brown invited all black leaders to go on television to answer a question: is it too late? The question that is before us: is it too late to do the necessary thing to right the ship of state? Is it too late? Because when you have been diagnosed with an illness that could potentially become terminal, the time to act is the moment you get the news. But if you delay in acting, the disease continues unabated, and when it starts attacking your vital organs, that is when you want to now take the medicine. But then the question becomes, is it too late? I think that no matter what we say, it may very well be too late. I think the madness in America has reached the point where they will openly want to kill the righteous. It has reached a point of madness where they say, if I'm going down, I'm taking everybody down with me. That's madness. We are right back to the God of the moon, who couldn't get all of the people on the planet at the time when moon and earth were one.
That's right.
To speak the same dialect.
Yes.
So he drilled a hole in the then called moon and set it off. It fell 36,000 miles and was shot out 12,000 miles, and the water from the moon fell to this part called earth, so that the earth is 3/4 water, 1/4 land, and the moon that once had water is now the means of attracting the waters of the earth and balancing the waters of the earth so that the water does not drown out civilization. So white folks, you are the God of your world. You are the God of your world. This is your world. This is not God's world. This is your world. I know what you want to say. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever would believe in him would not perish but have everlasting life. Right but wrong. God never loved this world. He preached the doom of this world before it even came into existence. Yes. God so loved the world, the definite article, the world that he's bringing in through El Mahdi and the Messiah. He's bringing in a new world. And he loved that world so much. Whosoever believed in that one who would bring in that world, you would not perish, but you would become a part of a world that would see no end. It's called everlasting life. It's called the hereafter. Oh, who wouldn't want to be a part of that world? Well, now I think I want to bring this part of the lecture to a conclusion. I can't do all that I have here, God gave this to me 10 days or so ago. I think it was on the 5th of October. 9 days ago. I sat with my research team and the words just flowed out of my mouth and they recorded it and transcribed it. And as I read it, I said, oh God, this is so much. I can't say all of this like this. And the more I read it, I saw the power in what Allah had given me to say. And it's now 4:15. If you give me... No, I still won't finish. So part two is next Sunday at Mosque Mariam in Chicago, Illinois. We've got to finish this entire lecture. But look, now, how many of you saw the debate the other night? How many? Would you raise your hands? Were you somewhat disappointed? Raise your hands if you were disappointed. It was like your champion didn't show up for the fight. Didn't it look to you like he was not focused? Didn't it look to you like something else was on his mind?
Right, sir. Yes, it did.
I'm not making excuses for him. I just have to tell you what he looked like to me. Did you know that in any part of a minute, anything that goes on in the world that ill affects America's vital interests, he knows about it shortly after it happens. Every morning, he gets what is called a briefing book. Everything that's going on in the world, he has to read it. Ask yourself, what did he read that day? What was said to him that day? On the 1st of October, they showed a tape recording of a speech that he made in 2007. Look at my brother. He looked somewhat bewildered. Oh, there's been many things said since the debate, right?
Yes, sir.
They said Romney went away from all his positions that he had been speaking for the last year and a half. And it threw Barack off.
Yes.
I ain't buying it.
Go ahead, brother.
If you're a fighter,
come on.
And you preparing for your opponent, you study his movements, you study his fights, and you work your strategy out according to how he presents himself. If he changes his strategy and comes out fighting different and you lose the first round or the second round, when you go back to your corner, it's called adjustment time. Every good fighter knows how to make an adjustment.
Yes, sir.
so.
If Mr. Romney was doing something different, you make an adjustment.
You don't get lost in what he did.
That's right.
But something was bothering our brother. Listen to this. When that video was played of his speech in 2007, they said
Obama was talking to a black audience. You notice when he talks to black audiences, he talks different than when he talks to white audiences. In other words, he's a chameleon. His language, his speech pattern was different. And then they characterize his talk as though he's an angry. Say it loud. So if he's angry and they're putting that out 2 days before the debate, his handlers, who that man up in Massachusetts, what his name? No, his advisor, Axelrod. Yeah, David. He didn't give him 5 smooth stones, though.
He told him, look, President, they're characterizing you as an angry black man. So you can't go out there and beat up on this white man. Because then you're going to look like an angry black man and you're going to lose a white vote.
And I don't know whether he fell for that, but on radio in Chicago, they were saying that Michelle was upset with the advice that he got. I don't know the truth of that. But let's say he was advised. You know how it is when you want your man to throw the fight? Because you had bet on the other man while you claimed to be for your man? I'm not saying that that's the case. But damn!
A warrior. You can see in his eyes when he's determined. He's a fighter. He was just off that night. Now I would say to our dear brother, look, you're not going to win any more white votes by being kind and gracious. You are already kind. You are already gracious. Every time Obama tried to be a little black, not even some black, just a little black. You remember when Professor Louis Gates was trying to fit a key into his door? Somebody said there's a Negro over there trying to rob the man's house. The police came and he said, look, man, this is my own house. They arrested him. And he's a friend of the president. The president rose. Hey. He didn't quite say it like that. But what he said was in defense of his brother. There was a big pushback. Then the police and Henry Louis Gates are at the White House
It's a teachable moment. When Trayvon Martin got shot down, the president said, if I had a son, my son would look like Trayvon Martin. Now he's in trouble. Like you took sides. He spoke out. See, when white folk hire you, and I have to say it like that, they want you to be all the way for them. Even Miss Oprah. She went down to South Carolina to fight in the preliminaries for Mr. Obama. Immediately, she was not the darling Oprah anymore. She had to pull back from the... See? You need somebody that's going to stand up for you. You need somebody that is not afraid to go to bat for you. You need somebody that will argue the case for you. And God has heard your cry and given you a champion in the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and his faithful minister. So, next Sunday, we're going to give solutions to the debt problem. Tune in. If it is the will of God, next Sunday, what about the immigration problem? We have guidance for the president on the immigration problem. Yeah. What about the lead up to the war with Iran? We have guidance for the government of America. All of these things that America is facing, she needs solutions to, but the solutions are going to have to be radical. So don't get up yet. You owe me 5 more minutes. My brother debated, and he had 39 minutes and change, and Romney had 38 minutes. And they say he spoke 27 myths in 38 minutes. Have you heard that?
Yes, sir.
Did you hear that?
Yes, sir.
I'm not making that up.
No, sir, you know.
What is a myth? Ah. Oh. You see, it don't have to be a lie. A myth could be rooted in facts, but it's still a conclusion based on erroneous interpretation of a fact. But let's look at the dictionary. A myth is a traditional or legendary story, usually concerning some being or hero or event with or without a determinable basis of fact or a natural explanation, especially one that is concerned with deities or demigods and explains some practice, rite, or phenomenon of nature. That's a myth. One of the definitions. A second definition, an invented story. An idea or a concept. His account of the event is pure myth. And the third definition is an unproved or false collective belief that is used to justify a social institution. Now, when I said what is a myth, somebody hollered out, a lie. And a lie is a false statement made with deliberate intent to deceive, an intentional untruth, an outright falsehood. So if in 38 minutes a man spoke 27 lies, a lie a minute. Lying performance on a night when the brother was off base. Well, dear President, you got to remember you're fighting for your presidential life. You're fighting for the vision that you have for the Democratic Party and for the country. You said there are two distinct paths that are diametrically opposed, different. This is what you said. Then if you're willing to fight for your vision, then next Tuesday, come out ready to fight for what you believe is in the best interest of the country. And maybe you can regain your place. Now, I close for now. I've had a wonderful time. I'm not happy because I didn't really say all that God had put on me to say. But it's so powerful. You just have to tune in, same time, same station. It won't be in Charlotte, but it'll be on the internet, inshallah. Next Sunday, part two. It's called Guidance for Our President and Our Nation. Our nation. Our nation. Our nation. Now, listen. In closing, listen to the words of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He said, this election, he was speaking in the 60s, this election is one of the most serious in the history of American government. Would you say the same exists today? Because either party that seeks the office of presidency is faced with the problem of saving the lives of the American people. If the present party at that time it was Democratic, remains in office, you know the answer. If the Republican Party takes over, you should know the answer. Should. There will be a lull before the storm. The storm can be delayed. And every hour and day that it can be delayed is to your benefit. Now let me close with this statement. Neither President Obama and the Democratic Party, or Mitt Romney and the Republican Party, can save the American people. Listen, just listen. It takes a radical solution, and you can't lie to the American people and produce the right guidance for the American people on the basis of a lie. If you vote for Romney, I'm not talking to you. If you vote for Romney, I'm not talking to you. The white folks who are ready to vote for him. Listen to me good. That man is in a bubble. And his bubble is not real. He's a cheerleader. Sis Boomba. Ra, ra, ra. Come on, white team. Let's get that Negro out of office. See, that's a rallying cry of a man that has no plan. And he doesn't have a plan. I will return jobs. I did it at Bain Capital. I blah, 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 blah. Not in this climate, Mr. Romney. You've already went to Israel and bowed down. This is how I'm closing. He went to Israel and wore out his knees. Got a patch now on his knees. Israel and his dear friend Netanyahu. We're not gonna let Iran get a nuclear bomb. Obama's talking, but we'll back you. Now you're already broke. You ain't got no money. Where you gonna get the money to wage another war when you broke spending borrowed money on the wars that you just started? Somebody gotta say it. America, you broke. If there's another war, you're going to have to borrow some money. Who you going to borrow it from? You're not borrowing it from China. But the Federal Reserve is ready to print. Print up as much as you want, Federal Reserve, because it's your end too. Printing money with no backup. And every day that they print more money, the value of the money you got in your pocket goes down.
This is the silliness, the foolishness of your leaders.
We'll fix it.
But Obama, he almost wore out his knees too. Well, I mean, he may not have a patch on his knee, but he was down there long enough to rub a little something in that knee. He told Israel, AIPAC,
American Israeli Political Action Committee,
he told them, even though we're in an economic downturn, don't you worry. Because the money that we've been giving to you, we're going to give it to you again and add some more to it. If that ain't deep knee bending. Now, I'm not making stuff up. We're in bad shape, brother. Now, if, remember this, Israel is the third most powerful nuclear nation in the world. Did you know that? Israel will not confirm or deny that she's a nuclear power. But Israel never signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Israel would not allow any atomic energy experts to come in and inspect her nuclear plant in Dimona, Israel. But now she is the prosecuting attorney for non-nuclear Iran, which the Khomeini, Ali Khomeini, the Ayatollah of Iran, issued a fatwa, a ruling that atomic weapons is against Islam. I'm not so sure about that, though, brother. I heard something from my teacher. I don't know whether it's wise to say it, but I'm going to say it. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that teachers are going to come to teach the black man and woman everything that we would need to build an independent existence, even down to the peaceful or non-peaceful use of the atom. Those are his words to me. Now, here. You can't go to a gunfight with a tomahawk. The only reason America not bothering Korea, because she can fight back. As long as Gaddafi was making nuclear and weapons of mass destruction, they talk about Gaddafi, but they weren't messing with him. They want to make sure that Pakistan keeps a good grip on her nuclear power. And America's always plotting how to get in and get it. China got it.
Yes, sir.
So India, next door to China, they don't get along sometime on the border, so India got hers. Pakistan and India don't get along, so Pakistan said, hell, I'm going to get mine too.
Now, see, one thing about a bully, he don't
You may not have as many as he got, but if you got one and know where to throw it, he's going to talk to you. Now listen. Now listen. Let's have a talk. You can't even dialogue with Israel because they got and you don't have. But if you attack Iran, oh, that's going to be catastrophic, according to the former Minister of Defense, Secretary of Defense, Gates. Now, if they do attack Iran, what is our position going to be? All right, Muslims.
Yes, sir.
All right, Americans. What is your position?
Well, I don't know. I have to fight for my country. Yes, it is yours. But you better have a stake in it before you go fight.
See, Elijah Muhammad said, we can't spend our lives taking the lives of others if we don't have something to fight for. Yes, it's ours, but how much land do we own in America that would allow us to produce an existence for ourselves and our people? Hell no. No, this is our country. Then give us a part of it. Listen, you got to talk like this. You got to think like this. It is ours. Own the land. Allah created this. He is the owner. And he allows humans to steward what he created. And then Allah says in the Quran that he's the owner of it all. And listen to his words. He takes the kingdom from whom he pleases. And he gives it to whom he pleases. I have said, and they have not challenged me effectively, that we are the real children of Israel that you find mentioned in the Bible and the Quran. And if we are the children of Israel and we are, God promised us a land flowing with milk and honey, because that's the only way we'll be able to provide a future for ourselves and our people. So he takes the kingdom from whom he pleases. And then he said, I will give the land to you and then see how you act. Now, if you act like those whom he may displace, you won't hold it long. If you're going to be corrupt and rotten and unjust and mistreat people who don't have your color, are not a part of your creed, are not from your class, then you will be uprooted. But you've got to be a different kind of people. That will give justice to all, regardless of creed or class or color. And you've got to be grown up by God to have that kind of mind, that no person living under your rule will be deprived of freedom, of justice, and equality. That's your destiny. So I thank you all for listening. May Allah bless you as I greet you in peace. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you, brothers and sisters. Can I ask you a question? How many of you believe that what you heard taught today is true and is good for us and America as a people. How many of you agree? Let me see your hands. Raise them high. Good. Then if you agree that it's true, shouldn't we work together as a people to produce a good future for ourselves and our people?
Yes,
Muslims, Christians, Jews, yes. Hindus, Buddhists, white, black, yes, Jews, Gentiles. See, once you have the right base, you can unite the whole of humanity as the prophet wanted to see it, as Jesus came to produce it, one world, one faith, one Lord, one baptism. That's the world that's coming in, and you have been chosen to bring that kind of world in. Thank you for listening, and may God bless you as I greet you in peace. Assalamu alaikum.